Everybody get up, it's time to slam now. We got the real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
Comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line. A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it! They win it! Kemba Walker. Step back. Walker. Cornier Kemba does it again. UConn wins at the buzzer. You want a jam.
Oh, unbelievable. Hey, yo, what you gonna do? Hello and welcome to another episode of Full Court Press. It is our second ever episode. I'm Josh Franz. Alongside me, as always, is Nick Merrick. On today's show, we're going to talk about Mike D'Antoni and the Lakers with that new hiring and what they need to do to turn it around this season, and predict our final four for college basketball, our finals winner for college basketball, and our NCAA Player of the Year. So how's it going with you, Nick?
It's good. It's going to be a big week of basketball coming up. All the basketball fans, any woes carrying on over from the college football season or NFL pro teams, not to worry, basketball is here officially. So Josh and I will break everything down. And on that note, let's go right to the NBA because it needs to be talked about ASAP. And the fact that a few days ago, Brown just was fired as his position after a 1-5 start with the Lakers. Then a controversy if they were going to bring back Phil Jackson. The Clippers fans have to be happy, at least, that Phil's not coming back to L.A. But it's actually going to be Mike D'Antoni. So, Josh, what exactly does this mean for the Lakers organization?
All right, I'll talk about this from a Lakers fan perspective because that's exactly what I am. Obviously, Mike Brown wasn't the right fit in L.A. He wanted to run a Princeton offense, and that just wouldn't work with the amount of isolation players that the Lakers have. Kobe wants to go one-on-one. Powell likes to go one-on-one in the post. And Dwight Howard wants to go one-on-one in the post. There's not enough room for everybody to do what they want to do on the floor. Steve Nash obviously likes to set people up. So these guys require the ball in their hands. The Princeton offense wasn't for that. And then you look on the defensive side of the ball, and that's apparently where Mike Brown specialized. But they weren't playing great defensively either. So he had to go. An 0-8 preseason, a 1-5 start in the regular season. It was time to change it up. I wanted, along with many other fans, for the new coach to be Phil Jackson. He's 11 championships. He's first ballot Hall of Famer as a coach. Even in Staples Center during games, they were chanting, "We want Phil. We want Phil." I thought it was pretty obvious. I don't understand how, if you're the owner or the owner's son now, Jim Buss, how you don't give Phil Jackson anything he wants because he is Phil Jackson and he will come here and win you a championship.
Well, with or without the bad start, is it a good move for any franchise of any sport to quit on your manager after a week and a half into the year? Is that the right move for a franchise, or should they have at least waited to all-star break? Team's not clicking. You have an injury with Steve Nash you had to come back from, and that was one of the crucial players going forward with that Princeton offense that you're mentioning now that's coming into L.A. So is there any big red flags there?
Well, I don't think it's ever the right time to fire a head coach, but you want to do it early enough in the season to where the next guy who can come in has time to implement his system, run the offense, because it will take getting used to running a full court, running offense the entire game. It'll take getting used to not really focus on the defensive end. And then you want to give him enough time to where he can be successful and compete for a championship because this team has the talent to do so.
Good point. And also just another side note, Mike D'Antoni finished first or second in the West from 2004 to 2007 when he was with the Suns. So he does have at least that big stance there. Obviously, the big note with being in the Suns, he's coached with Steve Nash before. So possibly that could play a factor going forward. But what do you do now, if you're D'Antoni, taking completely stacked lineup in the Lakers, that something he's never been used to, even his few years stint before he got to the Lakers, how is he going to shape this up? Is there any go-to way he goes with it? Does he stick to his plan, just have to build the team around it?
Well, first, you said Steve Nash played with him in Phoenix, and they have a great relationship going forward, which is nice. Kobe also played with him when he was an assistant on the Olympic team. They have good chemistry going forward. Kobe came out and said, obviously, I wanted Phil Jackson, but I like Mike D'Antoni, and I think we can move forward with this team. However, with the offense that they ran in Phoenix every year, finishing first and second in the division, 7 seconds or less, the Lakers just don't have the personnel for it. Like I mentioned, the two big guys inside with Powell or Dwight Howard. I'm going to play GM. I have three ideas. Two of them are trades, and one of them is a coaching lineup change. I'll go over the lineup change first, just in case the two trades don't work out. I would start Steve Nash when he's healthy, and then you have Kobe and Metta World Peace. I would take Pau Gasol out of the starting lineup because you cannot run a fast-paced offense with both Pau Gasol and Dwight Howard in the lineup. It's just not going to work. They take up too much space. They're too slow. It's not going to happen. So you take Pau out, put Jordan Hill in the starting lineup. He's not a guy who requires the ball, and he can run the floor and finish in traffic inside. He'll get rebounds for you. He's one of the guys who will hustle back and forth and play defense. I think that's a better insertion to go along with the other group. And then you leave Dwight Howard at center. And then coming off the bench, you're not too deep with the Lakers, but hopefully you can run a small lineup to where you could still run up and down the floor. So you have Steve Blake and Jody Meeks at the 1 and 2. Kobe will stay in with that second group, play the 3. Antoine Jamison, who you will never have to tell more than once to shoot the basketball from downtown at the power forward spot. And then you put Pau Gasol in as the backup center. And that's a team that can run the floor. And everybody on that floor, except for maybe Antoine Jamison, can pass the ball and find guys open. So everybody's going to get looked. Everybody's going to get shots.
Okay, I had to hold my breath there to the end so I could hear you out fully. But the fact that I'm just still rattled, either system or not, of how you could bench a player who gets $18.7 million a year in the NBA to be in that role, that should be something the coach should almost want to change back towards that player. I understand maybe they won't go that, but at least they're off the bench. Are you going to say that they're going to play more minutes than the starter would in that situation?
Well, no. Gasol will be the backup center in that situation. He's not getting more minutes than Dwight. He's not a better player than Dwight Howard. Nobody's
going
to say he is.
Absolutely.
But when you're doing what's best for the team from a coaching standpoint, I don't think money can factor into it. You can't allow yourself to play guys who are making more money because then you won't be successful. You have to play guys who fit your system best to have the best chance at success.
Well, I do like your other comment before earlier about Kobe Bryant, because he did actually post a Facebook message just after midnight on Tuesday saying that he's so excited to play for D'Antoni. So it has to be good for Mike D'Antoni knowing that the star player in the Lakers is so supportive of him coming there.
Right. You want the confidence of your superstar. He didn't have that in New York with Carmelo Anthony, and we saw how that ended. He comes back now in L.A., got a new job. I don't know how you fail a job and then become the head coach of the Lakers, but it worked for him. He knows he's lucky. He thought Phil was going to get the job himself. He said that just the other day in a press conference.
If you ask me, it was almost more of a blessing in disguise, dating back to the Suns. Maybe it was more of Amari's team, if you want to go that far, when D'Antoni was hooked up with Amari and Nash,
right?
Those years back.
That duo was extremely dangerous. And
add Sean Marion to that? Wow.
Right, but nobody's going to argue that Amari Stoudemire is more athletic or bigger inside than Dwight Howard. So now when Nash comes back and Dwight Howard, and they're running pick and rolls and throwing alley-oops, that's going to be the most dangerous alley-oop, not only in Lob Angeles or Lob City, but in the NBA.
It might be a matter of just staying healthy, too, with all the issues Kobe Bryant's had in the past 2 years, and then Steve Nash obviously aging and continues to age, but everybody's old in that lineup, except for Dwight Howard. It's going to be Dwight Howard's team in a couple of years. He probably made the right move by saying, I want to re-up with the Lakers, because he realizes he needs to get that understanding that, yes, Dwight, you are Superman. It does not matter what team you're going to be on. You will not lose your Superman status, but you have to understand, you can't do it all in a mid-market and be the face of a franchise. Right now, if you want to win that ring, you have to be supportive of somebody else's team. In this case, it's Kobe Bryant's right now, with him probably getting in a couple of years.
Right, and the timing of that couldn't have been any better, because he saw what LeBron James did, and LeBron James won a championship, and then Dwight Howard says, okay, I need some help, I'll go with the Lakers. And he's going to get help. Kobe at the tail end of his career, Nash at the tail end of his career, Gasol later in his career. But these guys can play. They're Hall of Famers.
It was a great move for him. I know we're way jumping behind the eight ball, but I mean, I feel like they're at least in the right path. I don't know how long it's going to take them to get back to 500, if it'll only take 5 games, or if it might take more like 15 or so just to figure out the new system.
Well, they're only one back of 500 right now, and they play the Spurs tonight. It'll be tough without D'Antoni there. They're going to have their interim head coach on the sideline. He's been with the Lakers for a while. Kobe knows what to do. Kobe can just coach the team for a game if they need to. He knows basketball well enough. And then Nash on the sideline to help him out. But this team's aspirations are not 500. It's to win a championship. And that's something Mike D'Antoni's never done. They brought in a coach who's great at winning in the regular season, who has never won the big one. So it'll be interesting to see if it was the pieces that they didn't have in Phoenix that stopped him, or if it's his style of play of just offense that is stopping his team from winning championships.
Well, just for Phoenix fans' sakes, they better mark down November 13th in the calendar, because right now they're half game above the Lakers, and it might not last for too much longer. So any fans locally here in Phoenix could circle down that date in the calendar and say this is the one time we're actually ahead of Kobe Bryant and company.
Well, how about when the Lakers come back to Phoenix later in the year? Do Mike D'Antoni and Steve Nash both get standing O's, or do they get booed out of the building?
I don't know. I feel like there's that respect. I don't think they get booed out. There will be boos, obviously. In every sport, you always get the hatred. You're like, why'd you leave me so soon?
And the Lakers are rivals.
Yes, and they're all stuck in the past. Obviously, I don't think I've seen more beat LA signs in Phoenix than I've ever had in my life the past 2 years I've lived here. I don't think he gets booed out, but there's definitely going to be a lot of people who are still bummed and living back in early 2010.
I agree. I think these fans have enough respect for what Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni did for the Suns. They have enough appreciation that they're not going to terrorize these guys and just commend them for all their hard work here in Phoenix. But now let me go on to the two trades that I talked about, and then we'll get to college basketball. The Nuggets were supposed to get off to a hot start. They didn't. They might be looking to deal. If I were Jim Buss or Mitch Kupchak, I would look in Denver. Now, you want guys who are big and who can run the floor. Not necessarily the smartest player in the league, but if you can trade Gasol for JaVale McGee and Kenneth Faried, I think that's a win for both teams. You pair Ty Lawson, Iguodala, and Pau Gasol. That's a great three-man crew in Denver for pick and rolls, pick and pops. Give it inside to Gasol. Let him play big in there. Lawson will benefit off that. Iguodala will, and then the wing players as well. And then if you bring Faried and McGee into Los Angeles, McGee can be that backup center to Dwight, who can run the floor and is athletic. Faried's that another small forward, power forward, who's scrappy, kind of like a Louis Scola, Anderson Varejao type, who's going to get rebounds and run the floor and be aggressive. And the Lakers have missed that scrappy guy for a long time. Since Roni Turioff, they haven't had a guy who can just bang the boards and be aggressive for an entire 48 minutes.
Funny you say that, because Fried actually looks like Roni Turioff a little bit when he got the hair rocking. But, the Nuggets do lead the NBA right now in rebounds per game. They are first. Fried leads their team with just under 11. So it could be an interesting mix both sides. I don't know if that trade – I won't take the GM. I'll take the advocate side, the fan side, maybe in Denver, and say I don't know if I'm going to want that trade. Just because you're going to lose two of your bigger guys. So if you want to win it, I think Denver's at the point where they're invested this year making a deep run. I think it'll hurt their chemistry for now. Although I think Pau Gasol could be the answer to a championship? Absolutely. But do I think it'll help them now? I think it'll take some time, because now you just change your entire makeup of the team in the snap of a finger or the sign of a check to send them across.
Right, but you're a North Carolina fan. Do you think Ty Lawson, the point guard of that team, can adjust to having a big man presence to run pick and rolls with?
Oh, absolutely. I think without a doubt.
Without Iguodala, with Iguodala in there, that's a big three.
That's true. I agree with that. I mean, Ty Lawson proved he had no problem with Tyler Hansbrough for all those years.
Right.
That's the reason why they eventually brought it home. But
he's not the most skilled big man in the world.
No. I mean, he's just a very hard worker. So if you put that hard worker mentality in the NBA with accompanied with the skill and the polishness and the size and the work ethic as well, you got a pretty dominant duo.
You were combining duo trio with Iguodala, Gasol, and Lawson. So that's one trade situation. You're not a huge fan doing it for Denver. I see how it works for both sides. The other one is in Houston. Now the Rockets in the offseason.
This could get interesting.
It will get interesting. They made a lot of moves to try and clear cap space and get guys going in the offseason, make room for people, and maybe they want Pau Gasol. They did try and get him earlier, just never went through with the Lakers, but now they have a guy named Jeremy Lin. And we saw Jeremy Lin in New York, and when he was dominating and it was Lin Sanity, who was coaching the Knicks?
Yep.
It was Mike D'Antoni. So if you bring in, if you can trade, get like Jeremy Lin, the deal I would have worked out is Jeremy Lin and Omar Asik, possibly with Daquan Cook in there, for Pau Gasol and maybe a Steve Blake and a Darius Morris to even it out a little bit. You have Gasol matched with James Harden and Marcus Morris in Houston, and that's a step up, I think, of where they are right now. I don't think Jeremy Lin in a conventional offense is a long-term great player. So I think Pau Gasol is an upgrade over Jeremy Lin for them, for the conventional offense. And they also have Tony Douglas to back up James Harden. And then
yes.
They can let James Harden run the
one
show
point.
There.
Point. Yeah, he would run. It'd be a good move. I mean, they obviously clean chopped and make sure they they had enough cap to get James Harden in. So if they really want to go all out, I know they wanted Lynn Stanley, but they really, the reason they brought him in was because he already had all that reputation. Houston wanted to get basketball back in their attention rather than in Dallas, because they've been stealing the show in Texas for the past decade practically.
And we know
with Yao Ming even too. I mean, yes, it's going so far as saying this, but they work well with big men.
They do. They, for all the troubles that Yao had, they treated him great, had him on the floor as much as possible, and he produced wins when he was in the lineup.
There's was the Dwight Howard Superman of Houston.
Yeah, those Shaq-Yao matchups are what everybody wanted to watch. Those were the two best big men in the West for a long time. And now you can bring Powell there, have one of the top big men in the West. You know how well they work with guys who are from overseas. Obviously, they wanted to stay possibly Asian with Jeremy Lin because they already have that fan base because of Yao Ming. But you bring in Pau Gasol, and that brings in a whole nother spectrum of money if you go Spanish. And they're a mid-market team. They could always use more cash flow.
And the jersey selling would give them a lot more revenue.
Exactly. They just made all their money off Jeremy Lin sales. Yes. They can make all their money off,
exactly.
Off Pau Gasol sales.
You'll tick all the fans a little bit, but if they understand that, okay, well, we're going to make this last move, like, don't mess with it anymore. Keep Pau and keep Harden and build around those two as your core. At least maybe they'll be more supportive. So if you get any Houston haters so being like, come on, man, I just spent like $120 on my Lin jerseys, and I don't know. Going a little too far there in case there's some crazy fans out there.
Jersey,
well, I said two.
Oh, okay.
$60 a pop, I figured. Gotcha. See if I'm discounting eBay.
So let me explain how that would affect the Lakers then. They would be without Steve Blake and Darius Morris. Then their backup point guard would be Jeremy Lin, who's a better man to learn from than Steve Nash, the one who has perfected the Mike D'Antoni system. You lose Pau Gasol, but then you have Jordan Hill start at the power forward slot like I've had in every other situation. And then you have Omar Asik coming off the bench playing backup center. He's a guy that really doesn't need the basketball either. He'll play defense and rebound. He learned so much about the defensive side of the ball when he was in Chicago playing with Derrick Rose and Carlos Boozer, Taj Gibson, Luol Deng. Their key was defense there in Chicago. He can bring that to LA. He and Dwight Howard, both defensive big men inside, get rebounds. Asik can attack the basket when he has the ball. And he doesn't need the ball to be successful is really the point.
Well, I think the whole thing, too, with Jeremy Lin, just a fun fact for the viewers that, you know, we were mentioning the Princeton-style offense. Lin actually went to Harvard, so
A smart guy.
A little ironic there that he'd be if he actually goes in the Princeton-style offense down the road. But, I mean, I could see it being good moves for both sides. Interesting trades. Will they happen right away? Absolutely not. Mike D'Antoni's more than content with just easing himself into L.A., seeing how the fans treat him, seeing how the team works with him, and then figuring out the managerial spots later. But one guy I also forgot to mention with Patrick Peterson, who's fourth leading on the team with double digits. He's one of the big man twos, kind of developing in a nice role the past couple of years. But speaking of Patrick Peterson, his alma mater was Kentucky, so fair time to switch over to college basketball over here.
That's fine with me. Nick, who are your final four teams?
Wow, good question. I think right off the bat, there's a lot of teams. It's not as clear-cut of a year as people assume. So no matter what we say, you almost have to go with it. You can't, unless we say something completely outrageous, you almost have to at least buy into it a little bit, depending on which four I say, which four you say. So with that, mine aren't there that crazy. I think my two for sure that I would put in is going to be Indiana and Ohio State. I think Ohio State finally breaks through this year just with the senior class coming back. I think they solidified a spot. And then it's just a bunch of question marks. So I kind of go with a couple dark horses here. I think one of them, which I believe, Josh, you're going to agree with me as well, is Michigan State with Tom Izzo, the way he runs it. All those Final Four appearances in the past 6 years, I think it's, what, four in the past six, something like that. I think he's poised to go back there. Yes, he lost his players to the NBA draft last year and also to graduation, but he comes back with another stacked lineup. And I think that fourth and final slot's going to go somewhere possibly between an NC State or a Louisville.
All right,
so I would say
what are the four?
Four are going to be Indiana, Michigan State, Ohio State, and Louisville.
Okay.
Which is ironic. I never do this, but I am picking three teams in the top four. There are some other dark horses. I truly believe this is going to be another year where a George Mason or a VCU type team comes out of the tournament. I just even in the top 25 poll I'm looking at, I don't like the UNLV, I don't like a Baylor, I don't like a San Diego State, I don't like Gonzaga this year, I don't like Notre Dame this year. Those are all teams at the bottom I don't think are strong enough to compete with the top or top teams, thus the reason why the polls put him down there. But right. I think some team outside of the top 25, possibly outside of the top 40 to start the season, is going to be in the Final Four come March.
Wow, that's a lot to ask for one of these teams. It's a far way up to go, but it's not like football. You don't have to be ranked there when the tournament
right.
begins.
Right.
You just got to get in.
Just got to get hot.
And you have a chance.
Yeah.
Get hot at the right time.
All right, so who do you have as your four? Any repeats of mine?
Yeah, I've got Indiana.
Okay.
Cody Zeller is
just so dominant.
He's going to be great in the NBA.
Man.
He's great now. I'll flash forward a little bit. He's my pick for player of the year. Might as well say it now. So far this year, just two games, small sample size, but I wouldn't be surprised if he continued this all year long. He's averaging 20 points on the nose, 2 blocks a game, 1.5 steals a game, and 9.5 rebounds. So big numbers there. He's averaging 20 and nearly 10. Who does that in college basketball? There are no big men that are dominant in college basketball. He might be the only one.
Back since, I guess, Odin was that dominant when he was at Ohio State.
And that's been a while.
That has been a while. And then we all know how his pro career's been going.
Well, let's not wish the same for Cody Zeller, but I think he will lead Indiana to a Final Four berth. The pattern that you're going to see for the other teams is all coaching. Indiana's dominant on the court, but the three other teams I feel are dominant on the sideline. I have Coach K's Duke Blue Devils making an appearance. When Coach K's teams are great at Duke, they have guards who can attack the basket, facilitate to the open shooters, and they have senior leadership. That is when Duke is at its most successful.
Yeah, I mean, heck, Mason Plumlee is going to be a player of the year candidate no matter what, and I'm the UNC fan saying that, but I mean, facts are facts. The past couple of games have been putting up double-double numbers. Coupled with plenty of assists, he's going to be in that list. The only thing that scares me about Duke, as great of a coach as Coach K is, he is, in my opinion, he's the best college basketball coach in the game right now. He's missing that one player, and that one player really comes down to either the loss of Austin Rivers or the loss the year before that of Kyrie Irving. If one of those in the program, I know you can't do the what-ifs, because every other team in the league is going to be like, well, what if we had this person? They're just missing that one crucial piece because they don't have the depth. Duke never has depth, but the one year they make the deep runs are always when they have those nine consistent guys off the bench. This year it's kind of they have their starting lineup of Plumlee, Kelly, Thornton, Marshall Plumlee, and then Curry. But then you're going to put Quinn Cook, Josh Harrison, Rodney Hood, and you're kind of thinking, well, who are these guys?
Right. Well, I'm going to tell you who one of these guys is who's going to step up and be that facilitator off the bench. A freshman guard by the name of Rashid Solomon will average, prediction, at least 7 assists a game for this Duke team. He will give Seth Curry his open shots. He will feed the Plumlees in the post. Ryan Kelly will also be a facilitator from the high post. And they will be able to work the ball around. And you know Coach K's teams are going to play defense and rebound. The issue has been attacking the basket. This kid will come into the program, feed people the basketball, and get them for what they need to do.
I like the pick of the assist because obviously you know better than anybody that they're very drive and dish type of team. The only stat you said that scares me a little bit was the 7 assists a game, just from the fact that Kendall Marshall did that in UNC. But I mean, come on, he was literally the top 3 assist leader in the NCAA last year, and he was around the 9s. So I'd be very impressed if a Duke guard off the bench had 7 assists. If that's the case, then, oh my gosh, they're a shoo-in for the Final Four.
That's true. Well, small sample size right now. Duke is playing Kentucky as
yes.
we speak. At halftime, Rashid Solomon has 5 assists. Just saying that. Obviously, Kentucky's
well,
a team that doesn't have
second half
experience.
Technically now.
Is it now the second half? Okay.
Well, they've been going in the second half. They're about
well, he had 5 at halftime.
It.
That's what I saw.
All right. That's true.
So, obviously, Kentucky's team is young, inexperienced. They're going to get better as time goes by. I wouldn't look at this matchup too much. Even Kentucky with all their freshmen, I just don't see them in the Final Four this year.
See, thank you. I really like that because this is the one year that is as great of Kentucky recruiting classes that Coach John Calipari has brought in. This one's nowhere close to even like half of his best. I mean, when you look back at just the superstar potential he's brought on with Terrence Jones and even when he was at Memphis with Derrick Rose and then last year making that deep run to the finals, then winning it. He was a national champion. Then now he's looking at his entire lineup's back to the freshman square one where he started off. No, really, there's like no sophomore in there that even's a crucial player. I just don't see. And right currently, I know, again, it's currently going live. 11 turnovers, 8 assists against Duke in the second half. You can't do that against elite programs. You cannot have 11 turnovers compared to 8 assists and expect to stay in the games. That's the reason why they're currently losing by 10. But, I mean, it's just an inexperienced team, young team. Will they turn around by the end? Yeah, they always do. Calipari somehow figures it out with his freshmen and sparks something.
But at the same time, there's a reason why 5 freshmen don't win the championship every year.
Yes, because they don't have...
And I think you have to attribute that to veteran leadership on teams like Duke or like North Carolina or Indiana.
I agree.
There's teams... Depth helps, experience helps, and leadership helps. And when you have 5 freshmen on the court, who's going to be the leader? How do you know who's going to step up? You don't. It might happen, but it might not happen. And he didn't recruit leaders. He recruited athletes. He recruited basketball players.
All right. So, sorry. I got your sidewind. So, we have...
I can go on a tangent every now and then.
You have Indiana and Duke.
Indiana, Duke. And then you'll see with the coaching, that is my theme this year. I've got Tom Izzo from Michigan State. We agree
so
on that
a repeat.
Pick. Because he seems to be there every year since I was 5 years old.
Very good coach. Him and Coach K in the same boat.
And we've talked about this guy before, not on the program, but on our personal time. How about Bill Self and the Kansas Jayhawks? He can coach. May not be the best recruiter, but with the talent that he has and he puts on the court, he gets the most out of him.
Interesting, because Izzo and Self just squared off earlier on Tuesday night, and it was advantage to Izzo by 3. So, again, it could be a great potential postseason matchup between those two. So we agreed with 2 of them. We both had Indiana. We both had Michigan State. The difference is where I had Louisville and Ohio State.
And I could see both of those teams being there also.
I can see Duke. They're definitely they're well coached, and there's reason why they're top 10 right now. And then obviously your other pick going
Kansas.
With Kansas, who's just been there, done that. They're always in the spotlight. So even with me spit talking and saying it's going to be a team not inside the top 25. I don't have the men down there to throw a different pick and say, you know, I'm gonna go with a team like Central Florida, for example, or
Florida State.
Yeah, they wouldn't do it. They can't do it.
Not this year.
I could if you're gonna go ACC school. Maryland could be a very big surprise
because of that one game they played.
Not because of the one, because you have a guy named Len on that team. He is unbelievable. The stats that the sophomores put up. I'm just actually gonna I gotta pull it up in his stats. Didn't have it ready, but. The fact that you could look at a sophomore to play such a high-end game, actually just won the ACC Player of the Week, by the way, another stat to be held. He had 23 points, 12 rebounds.
Wow.
Seven of those 12 were offensive. This is against Calipari's Kentucky team, his fast-tempo offense. He was 10 for 18 from the floor, had 4 blocks. That was a career high for him. That was in one game, but... Oh my gosh! Is Alex Len going to be a big role? He could win the ACC Player of the Year, and that's not even really reaching to say that. So
well, not
I'll
with those
just throw
stats,
it out there.
No.
Oh heck no!
So we've gone over our Final Four teams. I gave my Player of the Year a little earlier than we expected me to, but I went ahead and gave the viewers a little something. Now you are going to give your Player of the Year, and tell me which one of your Final Four teams is winning the championship.
Final Four team win the championship. Ah, man, I'm gonna go with I think it's gonna be Ohio State.
I think
I'm gonna go different. I don't think it's gonna be one of those surprising teams. They've always consistently been back there. And one of the guys who's on my Player of the Year watch, I have a couple. I probably have about 5 on my watch right now. Listed about 3 of them during this show. Is Kraft, Aaron Kraft, and the phenomenal stuff he's done.
He is
and
fun
his
to watch play.
Oh my gosh,
he might be the
kids.
Best. Defensive point guard in the country.
Unbelievable.
And that's not taking anything away from what he does on the offensive side of the basketball.
He's just phenomenal. He does everything there, both on both ends of the court, can play defense, can man up anybody. His size obviously affects him a little bit, but really it doesn't faze Kraft. For lack of better word. It's true though. I mean, he plays exactly what his name's like. He's very good. So I'll stop right there. I'm gonna say Ohio State. Do I think it'll happen? Sure, will not. Yeah, I mean, these are just predictions. But if I were to say right now who's a very good team, I'd say Ohio State.
I could see Ohio State winning it all.
And they're tested, by the way, too, in the Big Ten.
Yeah, Kraft's been tested all year,
so
all career long at Ohio State.
Who out of your 4 are you going with?
This is tough.
You sticking with the top?
It's so early.
I know.
And I hate to be the one who rides number one all the way to a championship.
But you could, I mean, they have
reason
to.
I'm going to say the best big man in the country leads the best team in the country to cutting down the nets in March. I'm going with Indiana to win the national title.
All right. I mean, it's nothing abnormal from anybody. Plenty of people are saying it was favorites. That's the reason they're number one. And obviously with a different style of basketball, they deserve to be there. But now getting back to our player of the year as we're about to wrap up the show. So you mentioned Cody Zeller. I highlighted Kraft. I thought about it for a while, wanted to give it to him. I thought about even Mason Plumlee at Duke, almost gave it to him. As much as I love Cody Zeller, he's going to have competition in the paint with his other big man. His name's Watford. So I'm not sure how he's going to be dominant, but he's not going to be as dominant as he can be. So thus, I'm going to go with actually a mid-major school winning the player of the year. I'm going with Doug McDermott. I think he's going to be the player of the year. He's leading the Creighton Jays. He is everything. He's 6'8". He could play forward. He could basically play shooting guard. He is a very sound shooter. His freshman year in a Jay uniform, he had 15 points. Right now, the past 2 years, he's had 21 and 22. Those rebound totals have been 8, and then they jumped to 11. Currently, again, it's only a game in, but he was 21 and 11 in his first game. So those double-double numbers are going to be consistent for him. They are a top 20 team. I think he's going to give a very good race to Cody Zeller coming into the year.
You make a great case. He'll definitely be in the running for the award, and I might say it would go to him if it wasn't for last year's Anthony Davis winning it. We look at Anthony Davis, we watch him play, obviously dominates the game, but he didn't put up great stats. Obviously, his numbers were good, but they weren't dominant. Like, they weren't Kevin Durant stats in college, like you would normally expect out of a player of the year. Like an Adam Morris and J.J. Redick, it wasn't that. It was more of the eye test, not the numbers look. And when you look at Cody Zeller and what he's able to do at Indiana, and you ignore the stats, he's going to put up better numbers than Anthony Davis. And when you watch him play, you can tell he's taking over a game.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think he's one of the best. He is the best. Well, right now he's definitely the best player in the country. He's the one that has the most hype on him. You know, another one who's been swept under the rug, which I'll just throw out, is UCLA's recruit Shabazz Muhammad. Just to throw out that we didn't have a segment on it because it really was swept under the rug, but he was academically ineligible to play at UCLA this semester. So he was going to be a player who's going to be top five pick. Probably still will be, but he would have easily been in the contention race as well. But now being academically ineligible pretty much eliminates him.
Right. Well, the NBA doesn't care about high school and college grades, so he'll be fine once he's done with his 1 year at UCLA.
Yeah, I think his big 6'10" frame, whatever it is, going to do him justice.
Yeah, if UCLA goes winless against good opponents until he comes back, and then they go undefeated once he's back, I'll throw his name in the hat for player of the year. He'll deserve it. But that'll do it for our second episode of Full Court Press.
Yeah, we covered a lot.
I hope you enjoyed it. We went from college basketball to the NBA and back, and we'll talk to you next week. For Nick Merrick, I'm Josh Franz. Hope you enjoyed it.